This is the opening music from the animated feature film North of Blue. Hello, and welcome to Words and Pictures, the show all about the narrative arts scene. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and we are live in the studio today with the filmmaker behind North of Blue, Joanna Priestley. Welcome back to the show.
Hello, Conch. How are you?
I'm well. It's been too long. I think it's been about 8 years since we had you on the show with Joan Gratz talking about animation. Gosh, that was right after the Platform Festival and everything.
Oh my God, I love that festival so much.
Well, I'll mention that Joanna Priestley was called the queen of independent animation by no less than Bill Plimpton. And you and Bill have had a wonderfully friendly rivalry. I remember at the Platform Festival, you had a symposium together with lots of animators, some of whom really liked character animation and some of whom really liked abstract animation. And I think you won in the end. You had a sort of debate with him.
Yes,
and
I did.
You got more applause.
It was billed as a smackdown. So he picked the funniest films he could find, and I showed abstract animation. And the audience liked the abstract films best, but I have to point out that my husband was the scorekeeper, so, you know.
Right. Paul Herod, and we'll talk about Paul also, but Jamie Haggerty is here in the studio as well. Jamie is an animation director, producer, and sound artist, and he is the composer behind that soundscape we heard at the top of the show. Welcome, Jamie.
Nice to be here.
And Brian Kinkley is here. Brian did the paint effects and title design for North of Blue. Brian, great to have you here. Paint effects, not actual paint, though.
Correct, not actual paint. It is computer generated, but giving it an organic sort of feel. So thanks for having me.
Yes, absolutely. This is a very collaborative project, obviously. And Joanna, you are kind of known for your collaboration. It's just all of the people you've brought in and worked with who are amazing talents in their own rights have done. Everybody here has done films, short films. One of the things that people might remember is a recent series of films you did based on slam poetry. And Taylor, we've got the book festival Wordstock coming up soon, and you met Taylor Molly at Wordstock several years ago and did a series of short films based on his slam poetry.
I did. I just happened to go into a little side program on education. It was a program on humor and poetry, and he stood up and performed a couple poems, and the woman next to me laughed so hard she fell off her chair. So I wasn't able to meet him at Wordstock, but I pursued him for I think over a year. And he finally emailed me back, and we collaborated. And that's when I got to first work with Brian, because Brian had done a invitation to his graduation at the Art Institute of Portland with incredible animation of letters and words. So Brian and I collaborated on that film, and he did all these amazing animated word backgrounds for the movie.
Right. I remember you've been fond of animation that has text in it, and you're fond of the Dada artists, too. I think Kurt Schwitters is one of your favorite people.
Definitely. You know, I did that show at the Hollywood Theater, I don't remember how many years ago now, Wordsworth 1,000 Pictures.
Right,
and it was all
right.
Animated films with text in it.
Right. And, of course, the Dada artists were fond of doing collages with pictures and text. So this is something that goes back a long way in animation. And so does abstract. Abstract animation goes back to pretty much the dawn of animation, along with figurative or character animation. Some of your heroes are the great Canadian animators like Len Lai, who used to do very transformative animation.
Two of my biggest heroes, Len Lai and Norm MacLaren, did completely abstract films. They were both paint on film, where you'd paint directly onto 16mm or 13mm film. But really, I think the most important pioneers are Oscar Fischinger, who started abstract cinema in the 1930s in Germany, and then after the rise of Hitler, moved to Los Angeles, where the first thing he did in Los Angeles was make an abstract short film with MGM, who sent it all over the U.S., and it was shown in regular movie theaters in front of a feature, if you can believe that.
And didn't his work inspire Fantasia in part?
He was hired by Walt Disney to work on Fantasia, and he, in fact, did the whole opening sequence, but the two men had very, very different personalities. So they had a real falling out, and Fischinger asked that his name be taken off the credits. So, and also Disney apparently took his work and made it more representational. So there was a big problem there. But you can still see his influence with that opening sequence. And my teacher at CalArts did the mushroom dance sequence with the black background.
Jules Engel.
Jules Engel, which was really completely radical in its day. And he's a very famous abstract animator as well. So he was a big, big influence too. I was his teaching assistant at CalArts while he was doing one of his most famous films, Playpen, in the 1980s.
So a lot of international influence, especially Canadian. And you got to return the favor by going to the Yukon recently in Canada and being part of... This is how North of Blue came about, is you were there in Dawson City, and you were working on North of Blue. Tell us how that came about. Tell us about how your feature film, your abstract animated feature film, started.
Well, I applied for a residency, and if your listeners are interested, artists and musicians and architects and designers can apply for these residencies all over the world, and it's wonderful to go. They give you a place to work, a place to stay, and sometimes even your meals. And so I've found my way to Dawson City. It's right next to the Arctic Circle in the winter, and I arrived there. The first thing that happened to me was my host said my parka was inadequate, so they had to give me a parka. And I didn't know what I was going to work on, so I took that parka and walked around every day for about 3 hours. Just walked around the park. It was so warm you could actually live in the park,
in
I think.
In this big scenery of Dawson along the rivers.
Yeah, and, along the frozen, or actually on the rivers, because The rivers are all highways all winter long because they're completely frozen. And it was absolutely amazing experience. And the first thing I started doing was animating snow and then ice, and then it just went from there. But when I got home, I had about, I'd say about 14, 16 minutes of animation, and I couldn't really figure out how to put it into a film. I just kept massaging it and adding more animation, and it just never worked out. But it wasn't until I sort of kludged it together with another failed experiment and completely changed the color palette that I realized, oh my God, this could become a film. But at that point, it was quite long. It was about 20 minutes long, and I just thought, 20 minutes? Well, I might as well make a feature. So I went for it.
Oh, is this, so what can listeners expect when they watch this? Is this going to be a really immersive experience?
I think so. It's got an amazing score by Jamie Haggerty. And the score ranges from sort of, I don't know what you'd call it, dubstep to trance. So this has this very, very wide range of moods. And it's, you know, my husband says that narrations... Oh, I forget the quote exactly. But the idea is that abstraction is much more a journey. It's not getting to a destination like narration. So I'm hoping people will relax into that journey, and I think it is 1,000% immersive. But we'll see. I've never shown it to anybody, really, just a handful of people. So we'll find out.
Now,
big
listeners,
experiment.
Listeners who have been to the Playa at Burning Man will... know that there are many experiences out there which use animation, which use sound and light and experiment with, well, giant zoetropes is one of the things that you might see out in the Playa. And you've been to Burning Man. So is this something that people out there who like that trance music, that like that that whole sort of sonic visual experience will recognize and appreciate?
I think it is. I've been going there since to Black Rock City to Burning Man since 2002. And yeah, I can definitely see the influence of Burning Man on this film. I liked EDM, which is the primary type of music that you hear there. And that definitely was an influence on this film. But maybe we could get Jamie in here to talk more about the score.
Yeah, well, let's play a little bit of the score right now. I want to give us just a sense of what they can expect when they go to the Hollywood Theater and check out North of Blue. So let's enjoy some of Jamie Haggerty's work. Thank you. That's some more music by Jamie Haggerty. You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Kautzer, and I'm live in the studio today talking with Joanna Priestley and Jamie Haggerty and Brian Kinkley about animation. The new project is called North of Blue. It's a feature film with music and sound by Jamie Haggerty and effects by Brian Kinkley. And I want to have a moment of full disclosure. I have worked off and on with Jamie Haggerty over the years. He has composed some music for my animation and for lots of people, including Joan Gratz's Academy Award-winning short, Mona Lisa Descending a Staircase. So Jamie, you have done an incredible variety of music, and you've really tailored it to whatever the visuals are. In the case of Mona Lisa Descending a Staircase, it was kind of the history of modern Western art, and it was a really great mashup. In this case, I can really hear the snow falling, the icicles in your work. What kind of inspired you? What direction did you take for this project?
This project, that's a good question. When Joanna showed me the film last year in end of April or May, there was only about maybe less than a minute of actual audio that she animated to. So we watched an hour of silent film. And after that, I thought, this is going to be an interesting project. Because it was just, you know, there was nothing there as far as audio. I had a pretty good free rein for the most part. And so I took it back and after I agreed to work on it. And I decided that I really wanted to not fall into my usual patterns. So I decided to use a audio work composing station that I'm familiar with, but I don't normally use, called Ableton Live. I wanted to get away from my usual patterns, something, you know, that I had to work with as well as work with the film. And it turned out to be a good method to work, I think, because Ableton let me sketch out quickly sections of the film as far as tempo, colors, audio colors, and I could throw things up pretty quickly that way and get a sense of what was going on. So I think I spent about 3 weeks, and I did 18 minutes of the film as sort of a pick-and-choose kind of showcase to show Joanna different styles. I wasn't trying to make it cohesive for the 18 minutes, but I was trying to show, well, this could work, this could work, this could work. And then when we watched that, and she understood what, you know, the direction I was going in, you know, we could discuss, oh, I really like this kind of sound. This isn't working for me so much. This is working better. And then that gave me a sense of direction as to which way to go.
You know, some of this reminds me of what audio artists in the mid-20th century, in the early days of music concrete and tape cut-ups and all that stuff, were playing around with the early sound effects and digital tools. You seem to go, you know, in and out of music and sound effects and sort of a meshing of the two. And I'm wondering, did you have any sort of instrumentation in mind? Did you have any influences, any people that... any musicians or sound artists that you were calling on in the back of your mind to say, this person, I want to sort of evoke what they pioneered?
There's definitely a lot of influences in the film. Some of the pieces that Joanna had animated to were dubstep. So taking tempos from that and sort of bringing it into my world, since it's, you know, I'm not a dubstep artist by any means, but it was good to experiment in taking that style and seeing how I can make it mine. The piece we just listened to was heavily influenced by Imogene Heap.
Ah, okay.
She does these interesting looping rhythm things that I like a lot, because you can't quite tell where the one is, and I really like that aspect of it. And they're quirky, so her style seemed to fit here and there throughout the film, because the film itself is definitely quirky.
Now, you're an animator yourself, so what do you think is what do you think is the secret to really getting music and sound for animation? You know, not just animating to some standard issue pop music, but really getting something that gets across the feeling of the possibilities of transformation. You know, especially in abstract animation, anything can happen. Anything can transform into anything else. You know, it can go in any direction.
Boy, I'm not quite sure how to approach that question or statement. I've done all kinds of audio for narrative films, comedies, abstract films, and they're all different in their approach in a way. Although my key, I think my best talent is to look at the film, whether it has a narrative or not, and just be able to choose a direction that the audience can go into. It brings them into the film. You know, with it being silent, they're sometimes not able to connect with it, but with audio and visuals, you can sort of become a part of the environment, you know.
Yeah, and one of the nice things about this film is it's going to play at the Hollywood Theater on the big curving screen that sometimes shows 70mm films, and with a full surround sound effect. So it's, you know, not just going to be listened to on people's phones, although there's nothing wrong with that. I know, Joanna, you did a very popular phone app a few years ago people could play with the animation on this app. It was very interactive.
Also, abstract animation.
Yes.
It's an abstract app.
Right.
Clambake, it's out of the store now because it costs so much to keep your apps in the Apple store. But it was definitely an influence on this film, because I was trying to create as much sort of interactive, playful energy with abstract images as I could. And that definitely led to this whole group of sections in this film that are made with three blue balls. The film is actually called
that.
First Blue Balls.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think we can say that on the radio. Yes.
Yeah.
And tell us about that section. What was so influential about Clambake?
Like the app, I was trying to do every inventive thing I could think of with three blue balls. So I gave myself a very narrow challenge and then just had fun doing it. The really great thing about this film for me was having this huge amount of time to just experiment in any direction that I wanted. So with a feature, I realized I was going to spend years and years doing it, and in fact it did take 6 years, but it was such a luxury to just walk into the studio every morning and just have, you know, this ability to experiment in one, you know, tiny direction like that with just three blue balls and see where it goes.
You see the possibilities. So this is going to be, tell our listeners when this is going to be playing at the Hollywood
Theater. Thursday, September 21st, the autumn equinox at 7 p.m. at the beautiful historic movie palace, the Hollywood Theater on Sandy Boulevard.
So this will be a group experiment. You like these group experiences where it's not just being alone, watching a movie by yourself, but actually being part of an experience where everybody's there at once at the same time, enjoying the same, you know, visual and audio effects.
You know, when I walked in the booth yesterday and we did a tech check there, I looked down at the floor and there were these 10 huge metal boxes, and I'm like, what's this? And it turns out it was the 10 70mm reels of 2001, A Space Odyssey. And I was just like stunned. And that whole place, that whole movie palace, just has this incredible history, cinema history. I mean, there's nothing like that in this town. And plus you can get like gluten-free pizza and beer, and, you know, it's just a great place to see cinema. It, you know, I just can't believe that people look at movies on their phone, actually.
Well, you just got back from Europe. You were traveling. You were visiting your husband, Paul Harrod, who has been away for quite a while. And
Long, lonely years.
Yeah. Well, he's been working on the new Wes Anderson animated film,
He's a production designer. Yeah.
Oh, he is. So, Island of Dogs.
Isle of Dogs.
Yeah. And this is going to be for fans of the Fantastic Mr. Fox. This will be something to watch. Anything you can say about that film that you...
He has kept it such a secret to me. Bryan Cranston is one of the main voices. The whole lineup of voice talent is incredible. And I know there's dogs and I know there's cats. Really, that's all I know. And by coincidence, he was living in an area very near the actual Isle of Dogs. It's a peninsula into the Thames River. So I don't know if that's where the title came from or not, but... He had like the best talent from around the world working in his art department. I think about 65 people from all over the world. A lot of them were from Portland because there's such incredible talent here in stop motion animation.
And this is stop motion, of course, being the puppet animation that Aardman Animation, that Leica Animation is well known for.
Yep.
So this is a big project. You'll be happy to have him back. But while you were there,
I just want to mention one thing. The Art Museum's having a whole show of Leica.
Portland Art Museum.
Yeah, animation. And also the Northwest Film Center is doing an incredible retrospective of stop motion animated films. So a great opportunity this fall to see that.
Absolutely. Yes, the Film Center at the Portland Art Museum. So you were also jurying or doing some exhibits in various parts of Europe. You were in Vienna, for example.
Yeah, I did. I was able to jury the Tricky Women Animation Festival, just animated films by women in Vienna, and also the Stuttgart Animation Festival in Stuttgart, Germany. Both really amazing experiences. I was very, very busy doing the jurying, so I didn't get to see all the programs that they offered, but it was a great opportunity to like meet up with old friends. It was fun.
They're very serious about animation out there.
Yes. They're really serious about it. The festival, like the one in Germany now, they said there was... I think 150,000 people attending. So that included outdoor screenings.
So was that refreshing to see a lot of animation that wasn't just CGI character animation, that wasn't just games for phones, that was really that full range of stop motion and hand-drawn and 2D and drawn on film and all the other stuff that we've...
Deeply inspiring. And also some really great CG films, too. There's great ones out there. Very inspiring to see so much work from all over.
Well, while we're talking about computer-generated work, let's talk to Brian Kinkley, because he took a lot of your work and really took it up to the next level with paint effects and special effects that really kind of changed the landscape, changed the color
scheme. He made it look really good.
Okay. So let's talk about that. Brian, so you took some of the material that Joanna had created, and what direction did you take it in?
Well, I generally work on the computer, and so does Joanna, but she hand draws it, but it's still in the computer. But both of us really like the more organic, natural look to everything rather than perfectly straight lines and
shiny stuff,
flat
right.
colors. So what I try to do is to bring organic qualities into it. After she's done her animation, I take it and add some shading and textures, and through various processes make it more painted looking. And sometimes some really amazing things come out when it's a still frame and it looks beautiful, like abstract art. And then once you play that in motion, it just gets really crazy because things are jumping around, because it's, you know, frame by frame, there's just too much motion going on. So we usually have to dial it back and just really find that premium point that doesn't distract too much but also gives it a lot more texture and quality look.
Well, and while Joanna's work is, I mean, abstract is certainly a label, but you really work from biological forms. You have some you really enjoy images that look like plants, look like animals, maybe sea creatures, things like that. So a lot of that stuff can really move in sort of serpentine manners that reflect sort of a biological world, a strange biological world, an alien planet maybe.
It is very much inspired by nature. This film was definitely inspired by the far north. And one thing that Brian didn't mention, which I'd like you to talk more about, was he added so much depth to the images with these amazing soft shadows that sort of fade off into the distance. And I've tried to do that on my own, and I can't. So, Brian, tell me, how do you do
it? Is that sort of a dimensional effect you use?
Yeah, there's, I mean, lots of different effects going on in this one. But, I mean, mainly just shadows is a big part of it. You know, a lot of the work that Joanna works with is flash-based, and so it's all very flat. But I try to bring some dimension out of it while not going, like, 3D. But, for instance, like, just the blue balls, which she started off with for most of them, giving a little bit of roundness to it. And then, you know, shadows going off into a distance and a perspective. Just that part of it. You know, that's usually the first step for each section of the film, and then adding paint and textures from there. So a lot of experimenting.
You're also a really good animator. And you animated the title, which I just was blown away by.
Well, thank you. Yes, I do animation myself. And had a lot of fun doing the title. It was, once again, titled, initially called something different. So at the end, she was like, can you make me the title? And I was like, sure. And yeah, that was super fun. But yeah, I mean, I also do animation for myself and do sound design for my own stuff as well. Can't say I write music, but you know, I mean, I think all of us, anyone in animation probably has to jump around and do a little bit of everything, so.
Brian was working for Google the same time he was doing this.
Yeah, doing Google.
Well, I wasn't working for Google, but on some projects for them. So.
Well, that's fun. That's maybe some of the most visible animation that people see these days is Google.
Yeah,
Doodles.
No kidding.
Well, the project is North of Blue. It'll be playing at the Hollywood Theater on Thursday the 21st and 7:30 p.m. Is that right?
7:30. No, and 7. Sorry,
7. 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock. Arrive early. And what's next for you, Joanna Priestley?
You know, I've been experimenting. I'm really interested in Jung, Carl Jung. And I've been experimenting animating my dream images.
Okay. Are you a fan of the Red Book then?
Kind of. Just visually, yeah. Uh-huh.
Do you dream mandalas at all?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Definitely.
Well.
Yes.
Oh, we'll have to look forward to that. Well, we've had Joanna Priestley in here. She's been called the Queen of Independent Animation by Bill Plimpton. Jamie Haggerty is here as well. He's an animation director, producer, and sound artist. And Brian Kinkley, who's an animator in his own right and a paint effects person for North of Blue. Thanks to all our guests today, everybody.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you.
And thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and at KBOO. FM. You've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. You can find an archived version of this show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Words and Picture. Mm-hmm.